With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent Breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
TalkSTL.com, Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 238, Manchester by the Sea. Doesn't that sound just
it does.
Peaceful?
It oh, sounds it like this. So should I add seagull lovely. Sound effects yeah. in the background?
Lovely. Very lovely.
Yeah. And a lighthouse, a picture of a lighthouse we should be looking
picturesque.
At.
Picturesque. Yeah. Lovely. I should have a nice cup of herbal tea.
A, like a little fresco.
New England chowder.
Flavored coffee.
Right. Yeah.
I'd wear one of those big...
Celestial seasonings.
Yeah, one of those big, like, wool knit sweaters.
Yes.
You know? A chunky knit sweater.
Yeah. Is that what they're called?
Yes.
I didn't know they had a name. Because technically, any sweater I wear is chunky. So...
Yeah, it's a chunky... You want a big chunky knit sweater, like yeah. a captain.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's actually... It's pronounced cap'n.
Cap'n. You're right. I'm sorry.
I don't mean to call you out like that.
No. I stand corrected.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I was rewatching. I haven't seen all of Futurama, and so I started watching from episode one. I've only seen episodes here and there all throughout the run. So I started episode one, and Fry comes back from the past after he's frozen, and Captain Crunch is no longer a captain. He's an admiral. It's just awesome. But the cereal, he's like, when did Captain Crunch get promoted to admiral? And then he's like, what does he say? Something about Count Chocula is now a... some other like high up whatever
president
regal tie
yeah
but you know but don't even get me started but I mean just the talking about cap and that just reminded me what a great joke that show was so funny.
Donald Trump would never allow himself to be anything Chocula.
No,
it's funny because wow. it's true.
It is true.
Yeah. Yeah. We should probably go around the table and introduce ourselves.
This is Dan.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Joe is still out taking care of a baby, the selfish bastard
baby.
He's making baby chowder, though, because of this episode, New England.
Isn't that, oh, I was like, I think all babies technically start as chowder.
Ew. No.
You're going to set him up. You're going to slow pitch him across the plate.
I don't want that colorful vision in my head.
It's not that colorful.
It's pretty much just... Enough.
That's what got Joe into this mess.
White? A creamy white?
Stop it.
I think you got confused. Dan is here this week, Tom. We don't do this when Dan
I'm
is here.
I'm enjoying tormenting him.
This is awful. It's really awful.
So the film of the week is Manchester by the Sea, which you may or may not have heard of. It's a pretty small film, but I don't think it's going to stay small. I think it's going to get a lot of awards attention, and I think we should probably just lead by saying, at least I felt, this was an amazing movie.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And it's like, it's interesting.
Casey Affleck you talk about a revelation. This guy. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he was great.
Gone Girl.
No, I know. Yeah. He's been
not
coming.
Gone Girl. Gone Baby Gone.
Sorry.
Yeah, we both
had,
yeah.
He was amazing as a bit part in Good Will Hunting. It's just like this, though, is a level like this is. Wow.
I have a master class in acting. Like
Gone Baby Gone is where I first noticed him.
Yes.
And I do remember him. Wasn't he like a friend of the brothers or whatever? He's like a friend in Good Will Hunting.
Yeah. It was funny. It was like he wasn't, I don't think he was related to Ben Affleck, but it's like,
he was like one of their work friends or whatever, you know, but I remember seeing him there. But yeah, the first time I saw him really act was Gone Baby Gone. And I was like, whoa. I mean, that was a phenomenal movie. His, his performance was excellent. And then this one, you know, so I didn't doubt him after seeing him in a few things now, but I mean, seeing this movie, it's like, wow, this guy is good.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's hard to point to when recommending this film. Normally, there are like really big things to get excited about that you're like, oh, you got to see because of this or because of that. And
yeah,
this is a very small film. It's a small story, but it just is just phenomenally well told, phenomenally well acted, and. When did you see it, Dan?
I saw it yesterday.
Okay, when did you see it?
Yesterday.
Okay. Yeah. And I saw it, I think, about a week ago.
Yeah.
And I will say it's been one of those movies that, like, the more, the further I get away from it, like, the more I like it.
Yeah,
it's a regular Blair Witch Project.
Yeah,
you're not shaking this one off anytime soon.
Yeah, it really sticks to your ribs. And it's like, and you end up wanting, like, you think about these characters like they're real people. Like, you're just like, oh, I wonder how he's doing.
I will say I thought the exact same thing, like, about Casey Affleck. So we know who Casey Affleck is. He's got a very famous big brother, right? I'm watching this movie, and it's not Casey Affleck.
Yeah.
Right. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing that I thought was amazing.
And he
amazing
didn't do anything, like, he doesn't, like, wear a bunch of makeup or put on a funny voice. I mean, he's got a little bit of an accent.
Just this character. Yeah, for whatever reason, I didn't see him. I don't know why, but he escaped into the role, and, like, just the way he played this character that we'll get into, but... Yeah. I totally saw him as Lee, right? As Lee.
He's just, and from the get, you're just like, right off the bat, you just notice, like, you know, and you find yourself, like, making up, like, why, what's going on with this?
Well,
they kind of tease you a little bit, but it's...
Yeah, and so I will say at first, I was a little worried this was going to be a kind of a slow Oscar bait. Like, when I first saw him, you know, okay, he's working this dead-end job. So he's a janitor, handyman for an apartment complex. And I'm like, okay, I get it. He has a crappy job, pun intended. And, you know, he's fixing toilets, he's fixing lights, he's dealing with all this crap, and it's like, sure, you'd be unhappy if you worked this job, right? He ends up going off on this lady because, I mean, she deserved it, but, like, you know, he goes off on this lady, and you're just like...
But you also see, like, there's another scene, like, before he goes off on the lady where he's in an apartment where that lady's basically throwing herself at him.
Yes.
And she's attractive.
Yeah.
And so... And he's just, like, completely disinterested.
Right. Oh, definitely. Right. And so, like, but at first I just thought...
He's a husk of a man.
Yeah, absolutely. He is just floating through life. Like, I mean, he's just there running through the emotions. And so, but at first I thought, okay, he just hates his job. I mean, obviously something's depressing him, but I couldn't really figure out what it was. So I was just like, okay, I get it. It's going to be some art house thing. He's going to discover himself, whatever. You know, I didn't really know what to expect. I hadn't seen a trailer. Didn't know anything about the movie. So I was a little worried it was going to get into pretentious territory and whatnot. But
and in lesser hands, it would have.
Yeah.
Like, because if you haven't seen the movie, first off, I mean, I really think that you should watch the movie before you listen to the podcast. Sometimes I'm like, it doesn't matter.
This one,
and it's not even necessarily that there are major, there's one probably big spoiler that.
There's
that,
a turn.
Yeah. Yes. But, but beyond that, it's not really a spoiler driven movie, but.
Although, based on, like, what, because I told people yesterday I saw it, and they're like, oh, it's a big, you know, I'm like, it's more than what you think it is, and it's more than it's being presented as.
Right.
You know, like, the marketing is, it you kind of get a sense of, like, oh, okay, that's what that's about, but there's more.
Yeah.
And they're not giving it away. I haven't even seen marketing for this movie.
Yeah, there's more, and it's definitely, like.
Well, Dan's a hipster, and it's really targeted.
Oh, okay.
And I even said, I go, I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not actually going to talk about, you know, how deep this goes, because it hits.
It does. It really does.
It is. And so, come to find out, there is a spoiler, and that's why he is the way he is. So I would say, once there was the reveal, and I don't know if we want to talk more before we get into the reveal, because it's like a half hour in or something, but once it gets to the reveal, you get why he's the way he is, and why he's so hollowed out.
And the thing is, you feel it coming.
And
like, the whole time, you're just kind of, there's that thing.
You know,
like,
there's a reason. I know. It's something happened. He drinks, you know, he just, he goes to work. He has a miserable job. He seems like he has a miserable existence.
He's aloof. He just kind of looks. Yeah. He just kind of looks off into space when people are talking to him.
Yeah.
He goes to bars and heavily drinks and then picks fights. Like, he's just a miserable person. And you're so you start off thinking, like, is this guy just an a hole?
Yeah. Well, at one point I thought he was going to be gay.
Yeah. Like, I mean, they went down that they
like,
even,
there's a scene in the bar where, like,
he's looking at the guy
where the girl is like clearly hitting on him, like she's just another girl throwing herself at him,
right,
devising her own meet cute where she accidentally spills a drink
and
accidentally
she has nice makeup.
Yes
she was done up well.
She was quite a catch, as they say up there.
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean yeah, she spills her drink on him and just throws herself at him, basically.
Yeah. And
he has
and
no interest,
just and but then there's these two guys at the bar that he's just staring at.
Yeah.
And I was like, is that what we're doing? Because I was also like also because I'm also like, but we've seen this story a million times. Yeah. Like,
repressed.
Yeah. Like, how many times, you know? And so, and then he gets in a fight with the two guys because he's like, why are you looking at me? So right. I really thought like, oh, that's where we're going. So I was glad that wasn't the story they were telling.
Yeah. And that's interesting. You thought of that because for whatever reason, I didn't pick up on that. I just
totally thought they were going to, I'm like, oh, and I was a little disappointed. I was like, oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. Like, is this what, like,
cheap.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I just thought he was for some reason just totally out of it, not interested in anybody or relationships. But you know what I thought was interesting from a practical standpoint is there's the two guys across the bar and they're obviously looking at him and kind of talking at him, poking fun at him, whatever. He's like, do I know you? Why are you looking at me? And it's like, I was thinking, well, you're looking at them too. How do you know they were looking? He's obviously drunk and not in his right mind, but in the moment I'm thinking, well, you knew they were looking at you because you were staring them down too. Like, dude, what? And he ends up getting in a fist fight and punching one and trying to take him on, and it gets broken up. But this really shows how unstable he is. And
also seeing the only way that he can feel any emotion.
Yeah, that's true.
He's numb until he starts
picking fights. Yeah.
It's a difficult movie to synopsisize.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because it's told non-sequentially, you know? And so it bounces back and forth. And I thought it was interesting in that it doesn't make any effort
to
let you know that you're seeing a flashback.
No. It was very confusing. So the first time that we see, the first time I recollect seeing a flashback is when he's driving back home and he is all of a sudden on the water.
Oh, technically, it opens with a flashback, right? Because it opens with him on a boat.
Yes.
With his nephew.
Oh, sure. I got that was obviously the nephew was smaller. Like, I got that. I just, what I meant was, I knew that was a flashback. He was going from like a memory to present day.
Right.
When we went from present day to another flashback and he was on the water, they didn't show any other characters. They just showed him on the water. And the only difference was his facial hair. In the present day, he had more of a scruff and more of a grown out thing. He was a little more clean shaven on the water. But like he was driving back home to Manchester and all of a sudden he's on the water in a yellow sweater. And I'm like, wait. Did he have to take a ferry to get to a certain part? Like, I was very confused because there's no transition. There's no color change. There's nothing. He's driving. Then he's on a boat. And I thought, oh, he has to, like, not ferry, but, like, he has to take a boat from where he parked to get somewhere. You know, I was confused. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, he's back in the car, back to the old facial hair. And I'm like, oh, okay, that was just a memory.
It's a bold directorial choice because it will do one of two things. It will either confuse you or it will force you to pay more attention to the film and the little things going on. And that was the effect it had on me. I think it's the effect it ended up having on you.
Oh, yeah. After the first one, I got it.
And that initial moment, though,
you don't know what you're watching.
I was like, what are we doing?
Right? The first time, you can't know because it's you're just being introduced to the art style, the editing. So I had no choice but to think in my mind first. I'm like, oh, he's taking a ferry to the town or whatever.
Right.
Oh, he's back in the car. So I'm like, oh, that's what we're doing. We're going to get just cuts to flashbacks and not know. And you'll have to look at the facial hair. You'll have to look at the outfits.
Yeah. And figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's not going to spoon feed anything. To you.
Yeah. So the reason he's going back home, I mean, I don't think there's that much in between here and there. You see he's got his dead end job as a janitor.
Yeah, we see his job and we, you know, it's kind of interesting. It's like he does his job very well.
Yeah.
He's just doesn't
put up with crap.
He just wants to do the job.
He's there
to
do it.
He doesn't want to interact. Yeah. He doesn't want to really talk. He doesn't want to hang out with anybody.
After he yells at the lady, his boss, the guy that owns the apartment complex, is telling him, like, you're not friendly. I get complaints about you all the time. You don't say good morning. You don't talk. You're not friendly. And, and he's basically just like,
says, I come early. I stay late.
You don't hire me to do that. I'm never sick.
I do all this stuff. I do all the plumbing. I do electrical work. Yeah. And we both know that I shouldn't be doing that. That's illegal. Yeah. And I don't even take any money. Yeah. You get all the money.
Yeah. He's not wrong.
No. And the guy's like, well, you need to apologize. And he's like, no, do what you got to do. And the guy's like, okay, well, I'll apologize.
Yeah,
you know,
right. Yeah,
like, I know. He's got a sweet deal.
He knows he's got somebody who's really good.
He has him.
He lives in maybe 300 square feet, of space.
We find out that's part of his salary. Yeah, he makes minimum wage plus that crappy one-room apartment.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what he's paid to do this job. Tiny room. To maintain an entire, not like a one building with four units, like it's a big building. It's a four buildings.
I would say it's more than that because later when he gets another job, he says, he's like, it's only two buildings. Yeah. So I'm like, so clearly wherever he was at was more than
picture of the outside is like a big brick building, lots of windows in it, and there's four of them. So yeah, he's making minimum wage, and you can tell like he's one of only, I think there's later when he's getting coverage for his job, there's like three other people working, and it's a lot of work. So we find out he's outside shoveling snow when he gets a call. At this point, we don't really know.
Right.
We don't know yet what the whole deal is going on, and he gets the call and he says, I'll be right there, it's gonna take me an hour and a half to drive there. And we find out it's his brother has passed away. And then
in retrospect to add to his tortured life, like they were like, you need to get up here before he dies, and he dies while he's driving up there. So like he didn't
like
even
half
get,
an hour after he got the call
he didn't even get that
it, yeah it really it sucks. And so we end up getting flashbacks to him in the hospital when his brother found out that he has this is it congestive heart failure, is that it?
Is
congestive heart failure that
he yeah but he has to, it's a disease that I mean when they we flash back to the doctor explaining it it's
I guess because like my grandmother had congestive heart failure for like 100 years
which is a fairly rare it's for people who, and their life expectancy is like
is really brief and
50 six,
yeah and,
or
and,
six,
and 10 years he
and
gave.
My grandmother died like a little less than a year ago. I mean, a little over a year, but at a year. And she was 94.
Yeah. Right.
And it's like,
your grandmother was not a fisherman either.
That is fair.
That's true.
But you know what I mean? Like,
fisherwoman. This
fisherwoman,
is.
Fisherwoman. Yeah. But I mean, it's like he has a job that is a healthy person takes
taxing.
Its toll.
Yeah. Sure.
And so, he also has that extreme, version of it,
right?
Because it
is a perfect storm of something that could happen.
Yeah, because like when my grandma, they were like, take these pills, there you go.
Yes.
And then she took the pills. I mean, she took more pills than a funk band,
Grandma Bootsy Collins
she took
getting on the starship.
She took enough pills to be full. They were like a meal replacement, she took them for, I don't remember a time when she wasn't like, oh yeah, congestive heart failure. I take these pills. Like that's why I was like, wait, that's like a death sentence?
This one apparently is.
Yeah. So, and in the scene where they find out, we should back up because it plays a role. You see his wife, the brother's wife.
Kyle Chandler is the brother.
I was gonna say, we're introduced to the dynamic of that family.
And the wife is just a white trash nightmare. And believe me, I can spot them. Now,
would you say she was a see you next Tuesday?
She sure seemed it.
Yeah.
And
her husband has just gotten a death sentence, it 5 or 10 years. He's only gonna live to 50 or 60.
Yeah.
And she is just, I mean, I get being upset, but she is like, she's making a point to like just be
and she's making it all about her.
Yeah. And, like, and she's like, I can't take this. I'm going to leave. And the husband, who, again, has just got his death sentence, is like, you're what? You're leaving?
He's like,
I'll be home.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
He's in the hospital and said he's going to die. Like, terrible. Yeah, so you can see that's the type of person she is. And we find out later that she's no.
And this movie, what's funny is that this movie has great bits of humor.
Yes. It's
and yet it is so tragically sad.
Right.
And how it's able to sort of balance that and in a way that doesn't feel cheap. Inappropriate yeah.
On either level. The humor is never at the expense of the topic at hand, and it's always just like real slice of life stuff. Yes. Like you don't even really necessarily. Sometimes it like hits you that like you just heard a funny exchange. Like
right.
Like later in the film, when Lee is with the nephew, and he's like he has been upset and he punches a window,
mm-hmm.
and he's sitting at dinner, his hand's bandaged, and Patrick's like, "What happened to your hand?" And he's like, "I cut it." And he's just like real dry. And he doesn't even look up from his plate. He's like, "Oh, good. For a second there, I didn't know what happened."
Yeah,
like and it was just.
Yeah,
like,
no, I love
and it
that
was
line.
Really yeah. funny, but it yeah. was like, but there was like this beat when before you realize that he just told a joke, you
yeah.
know? And
right. Yeah.
Oh, that was fantastic. No, I remember that one.
Yeah, that well, you know, and in that scene with the wife, you know, because the doctor is basically telling them, this is a bad disease.
Yeah,
and then Kyle Chandler is like, well, "What's a good one?" And she's right. like. Poison ivy,
right? The doctor has a joke, yeah.
And that also sends the wife into a
yeah.
Fit.
That's what like, sets her off is that they're making jokes, and it's like, and especially for someone like me, like I mean, I make jokes about everything.
Yeah,
like,
that's
I mean,
how you would deal with.
Yeah, like I get. Like, yeah. I mean, I got laughs yeah. at my mother's eulogy.
Yeah,
like, that's just
there's
not
just a, nothing
not,
else that can. I mean, yeah. you know, the wife does it. She just does it. Well, she's in her own place, but
yeah.
like they're handling the situation that they're given.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is how this family, well, most of them handle it.
And yeah. she storms out and leaves him to himself.
Yeah.
yeah.
In the scene. And we come to find out in life.
Yes.
Like yeah. she just like, you know, like, cause there's a scene a little bit later where him and the son come home and she's like, drunk and naked on the couch.
Yeah, she yeah. has. It was weird because I also didn't know what they're alluding to, and now I realize she's just a total drunk, like you know,
right.
and just in a really bad place. But they come home, both the brothers and the young son. This is another one of those flashbacks, and yeah, she's on the couch with a shirt on but no pants and like no underwear visibly.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
and there's a bottle on the table, and I'm like, is she cheating on him? I'm just, right. she had no pants just, on, right? No, she's just a blackout drunk with no pants on.
Yeah,
but you know, I mean, I didn't know what they yeah. were building
they,
up to there.
They
but,
give us pieces.
Yeah.
Along the way, when Casey does get to the, when he gets to the hospital and he finds out, you could just see like his reaction, and which I think is you know for a lot of people, like
yeah.
when he finds out and you know he's just like, is he dead? And he's just kind of like, there's not a lot of emotion, which is I think what makes this movie so good is that they don't go for the like
it's understated,
yeah, they're yeah, not overacting.
He's just like, okay.
Yeah, they're not overacting to like what
they
hold.
Think.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, and they don't have a much. There's not a lot of music in this.
Yeah,
you know?
It's very
and
slice
they hold,
of life.
They there's a lot of handheld camera, and yeah. it feels very invasive.
Yeah,
but I think
almost like a documentary. At
yeah,
times.
And yeah. it's just very uncomfortable.
Yeah,
but it's
those
an uncomfortable
situation.
Yeah, you just kind of hold on that seat for a long yeah. time. You're like
them going in the elevator, him with the doctor going down to see the body of his brother. And
yeah,
it just lies.
And he's
wait,
like,
or when the son
I...
goes to see the body,
yeah.
where he's like, I want to see it. He walks in, and he like literally
yep.
walks in, spins around.
He's
like
okay.
I thought that was great. Yeah, I love
out.
That they showed that. Like
because like I'm the guy who's always been like and some people. Are put off when I'm like this, but I'm like, I don't need to see that. Like, I don't think there's a conspiracy at foot that I need to confirm that that's the dead body of my loved
right.
one. Like, if you're telling me, like, you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
it's like, you know, like, if you're telling me that they died, like, I'm taking you at your word,
right.
you know, like,
well,
we're at a
yeah.
hospital. Like, I don't need
well,
to see that.
What's even better about that scene, though, is the build up to it. So,
yeah. yes.
so we eventually come to find out that the reason, you know, he's there to see the brother and to console the nephew. And once he finds the news, he's kind of staying with him. He plans on staying with him for a week and trying to figure out, and we eventually get to the lawyer and there's plans
yeah,
set
there's,
up.
There's affairs to
yeah there's
to put
yeah
order,
he's the only family because the wife left, so the brother Casey Affleck's character
yeah.
Lee is in charge of figuring this out for the nephew and everything. So he's with him, he picks him up from hockey practice and he goes, I need to go to the hospital to fill out more paperwork, do you want to see the body?
Just real quick, the hockey practice scene, like when you see them telling him
yeah
and his dad's dead and you
yeah.
don't hear a word,
I love it, it's
and
from
it's
far
all,
away
I mean
yeah.
it's funny because it's like in some ways this movie has the kind of melodrama that silent films used to have,
yeah,
and it could be and that could play very poorly, but because
right.
of how understated the acting is, it doesn't.
Yeah,
and then I'm like, and here's a scene that's literally done in silence. Yeah. It's literally a silent movie as they're telling them what happened.
Yeah, we're watching basically across the rink from
when starts,
the
rest you're of the on other the players. Other side, yeah. on the opposite side
it
of the ice.
It starts when he slams someone into the glass on the other side of the rink,
yeah.
and then he sees Lee come in, and then he skates across, then the coach skates across,
right.
and we stay at that side that they started at,
right.
and we just see the facial expressions. You see the kid getting the news.
And the only one who tries to make any sort of like emotional connection is the coach.
The coach, right.
right.
You can see how
Lee,
these...
Yeah. You know, so basically the brother and the son are both kind of like... They're resolved to it.
They knew that this day was coming.
Yes.
And like Lee, Patrick, as soon as he sees Lee's there, he knows. He's not there to tell them that there's been an unexpected lottery win. Like he knows, like,
my dad died.
Yeah.
And Nat also seeing Lee sets him off, and he starts cursing at the coach because the coach's like, what'd you say? And he's just like, still does it. And he says, okay, you're suspended or whatever. And he skates across, and then he eventually understands. But like, he sees Lee, and that sets him off.
Yeah.
Is the reason. And the coach doesn't understand it until he gets the news.
Yeah.
But that whole scene is fantastic. And like, I agree with the silent parts really add more to it.
Right.
Well, it's also... back at the hospital when he's like talking to like I guess like their buddy who worked on the boat with his brother, and he's like, do you want me to call so and so? And he's like, and can you call my ex-wife?
Well, he doesn't,
and they just drop that in there.
He doesn't say ex-wife.
Yeah. No, yeah.
He says, can you call my wife?
Yeah.
And they look at him, and then he says, my ex-wife.
Yeah.
And that's the first piece of the puzzle we get, you know, because so we see this guy, he has been married at some point.
And we have seen... At that point, we have seen his family.
Yeah. Did they? I didn't think he went back to that flashback.
Yeah, we saw his daughters and
okay.
Because you see, because there was a flashback where she's like sick in bed, like with a cold.
She had cold,
and
it's Michelle Williams, who's amazing in this too.
It's funny because it's like I'm watching the movie and I'm like, and Michelle Williams is a phenomenal actress.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe that she began on Dawson's Creek.
Yeah,
I'm watching the movie and I'm just like, why is she in it?
That's Michelle.
Yeah.
Because it's like
she's in two scenes.
I think there's like three, four scenes.
Maybe.
But they really only need Michelle Williams for one scene.
Yes.
And that scene comes very deep into the film. Yeah. And so for the bulk of the film, I'm sitting there going like, well, this seems like a waste.
Much to her character.
Right. And it seemed like she's got almost nothing to do.
I didn't get it either. And there's like two flashbacks and there's like two present scenes.
But when you get that final scene with her, or I guess it's probably technically the second to last scene, but the scene, it's like sweet baby Jesus. Yeah. Like she crushes it. And I'm like, and then I watch it and I'm like, I don't know how many actresses in Hollywood could have done it.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it was just such a great performance of just, there's so much in that scene going on and unsaid.
Yeah.
There's like nine different emotions.
Right.
Just colliding simultaneously.
Well, it's almost a discredit to her that as I was watching that scene, I was like, she's got to be drawing
on something.
I was thinking, you know, like Heath Ledger, which is unfair because she's an actress.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but it was just like, because it's so charged that you're just
my God, it's
this is coming from an informed place.
Yeah. Right.
The only point I was making was when they were going to the hospital, there's a large buildup to the conversation where Casey Affleck, you know, his character Lee goes to the nephew and is like, do you want to see him? I have to go fill out some paperwork. And he's like, and I think the nephew asks, how does he look? And Casey Affleck looks, well, he's dead, but he's not like scary or gross or anything. I thought that was another understanding. Well,
he doesn't look like he's sleeping.
Right. Yeah. He's like, he doesn't look like he's sleeping.
But he's not gross. So like that was another funny thing that had a very not funny situation. The fact that he said he's not gross or nothing or however he says
it. And like that, it's so funny though. Cause like if you're going to see a dead body, like one, it's that those are the thoughts you have as a parent, which he is a de facto parent in this relationship, in that it's like you want to convey, like, especially when a kid reaches that age, it's like, okay, I'm gonna start letting you making these choices. If you want to see this thing,
yeah,
thing is, I mean, incident, not the his father's a thing. But if you want to see this body, I am not going to stop you, but I'm not going to encourage it. Yeah. And I'm going to brace you for the fact that he does not look like what you think.
Yeah. Right.
But at the same time, like, you know, his eyeballs aren't hanging out or something weird. Like, right, it's just, you know.
And he also says, and I thought he did a really good job of de facto parenting again, and obviously he has experience as a father, as we come to find out, but he, you know, he says, I don't know if you want this memory. You know, I thought that was a really good point. He's like, do you want this to be the last memory of you seeing your father? I don't know if you want to remember him like that. And so, and again, the part with, okay, let's just go. They park in front of the hospital, and the kid says, okay, let's just go. And so Casey Affleck starts taking off, and the kid opens the door to get out. And that was another great interaction. And Lee just blows up because he's scared. And he says, what are you doing? You said, let's go. And he said, no, I said, let's go to the hospital. And like, so, and then he's like, no, you said, let's go out of here, you know? Yeah. And then, the nephew Patrick says, oh, excuse me for misappropriating the English language. Yeah. Right? It's a great line. Like, you know, for, you know, I can't remember exactly how he says it, but he basically says that. And so again, another great interaction between the two in a humorous and a non-humorous situation, but he ends up going. But then after all that buildup of like a 5-minute scene or whatever it was, I do love that he walks in. It's the same exact setting and camera angle as when Lee walks into the room and has a very touching and again, emotionally charged, you know, he sees Kyle Chandler, who didn't look like Kyle Chandler to me, but I was very confused. I don't know, just seeing him profile and laying in the bed, I'm like, is that him? He's all shaved, but I don't know.
He's also like bloated.
Yeah, okay.
He's a little bloated. Yeah. Okay. Because congestive heart failure will do that to you. It's like a water buildup around your heart.
Okay.
And so like you'll start to retain fluid.
Gotcha.
And
so maybe they changed his look.
Yeah, I think that's what was going on.
So it's very emotionally charged, and he kisses him and gives him a hug and everything, but it's like this one camera angle, him walking in and getting close to the body. But anyway, so they show the same camera angle, and the same nurse or doctor is there, and she's in a different outfit, so you know it's a different time, but she's standing in the background, and they open the door, same camera angle. Then he goes up, looks at him, goes, nope, and leaves. And that's the end of the scene.
He barely even stops. He just like gets there, pivots, spins, so, out, back out the door.
Changed his mind.
Yeah, so I just thought it was such a great reaction after the buildup and then showing the exact same situation and scene, but his reaction is nope.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like, interesting because I read a review of a film of someone who didn't care for it, and most critics have loved it, but that they said that they just couldn't deal with how bleak the film was, which I thought was funny because it's like there is certainly a sadness in this film, and we haven't gotten to the truly sad part yet, but there is also so much humor and genuine like love.
If you're only seeing it as bleak, then
you're missing
then
the
you're
point.
Probably on that side of the fence already.
Yeah, like it's, I mean, because there's also a lot of love between the characters.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it's not overt, touchy-feely Hallmark movie kind of love, but it's clearly there.
The fact that Lee cares so much about Patrick and cared so much for his brother
that he'll come back
truly
to this town.
Apparent that this town and then we come to find out, I mean, the reason that he is not there and has moved away is just heartbreaking. And should we just get into it?
Yeah, I think we should.
I mean,
because the longer he's in the town, the closer we get to, like, you know, oh, he lived here.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, the interesting thing is all the way from back when he tells Patrick at hockey practice, we get insight into people know who he is.
Right.
And so I thought he was.
The coach is like, that's Lee Chandler?
Yeah. I thought it's interesting they gave him Chandler as a last name. Like, do you ever think that's weird when an actor, I mean, Kyle Chandler plays the brother.
Right. Right.
What are the chances of all the characters in the world and all the actors and all the names they could have that why would one even, first names I get, but last names even match up? So I don't know. I just thought it was funny. But anyway, they keep alluding to people know who he is. And I thought, oh, he was a famous hockey player until something, you know. And
scored the winning touch goal.
Because they go, the Lee Chandler. So
sports.
I think they purposely, that's their misdirection. They want you to think he's some famous person that, you know, did something. And then obviously.
Yeah, somebody even makes a reference like, well, don't believe everything you hear or something.
Right. The kids said, they go, the stories aren't true. And so I thought like, he scored the winning goal with one second left. And the kids said, I don't believe that story. So that's where my mind is at.
Yeah.
And so you're not sure why, but people know him, and he is, we find out he's infamous more than anything.
Which is more than famous if you follow Three Amigos.
And we see this flashback, and this comes after we see a scene where it's 2 a.m. and Lee is downstairs with like 10 of his buddies. They have two little girls and they're sleeping upstairs, and
and a newborn.
And a newborn, yeah. And the mom is, you know, upstairs from this basement where they're playing or whatever. But it's 2 a.m. and they're playing ping pong and they're drinking and they're blitzed out of their mind. And
they're not really doing anything wrong.
No, they're just loud.
They're just loud.
And there's a lot of them.
You know what I mean? Yeah, he's had a lot of friends over and they're being loud, but they're not like carousing. There's not, you know what I mean? Like, no, it's not a fight club or anything.
They literally are just standing around watching each other over. Play, you they're, know, they're two guys play ping pong.
Yeah, at the end of the day.
And they're loud.
Yeah, it was like they were loud and they needed to go to bed. Like, she was right. Yeah. But also what they were doing was relatively mundane. Like, they weren't, wasn't like some crazy party with like hookers and blow.
Exactly.
Right.
But she also wasn't a shrew.
Was
You know, it's like you're
you get it.
Both sides are, it's like, people down. It's like, they should be gone.
If you've been married, you get it. You have another person in the house. If you have kids, like,
they got four other people in the house.
It's 2 a.m. and these guys are being loud. They are being like party loud. Like, if you were having a drunken party, whatever, they're being loud. Right. There's kids sleeping upstairs at 2 a.m. She comes downstairs and then they all get quiet. And he's like, yes, dear, whatever. She starts walking up the stairs and then he does the thing that you do with your buddies. Like, she can't tell me what to do. And they're all laughing and she comes back down and is like,
he's like, okay, go. I'll clamp up.
Yeah, and maybe you didn't hear me, but she, like, I mean, this is another really good performance. I'm not saying it's as powerful as later, but she seriously was I'm not f***ing around. You know, she gives awesome. Like a, yeah, it was,
the,
it's
the
cool.
shift of like, I'm mad, but I'm being nice. Yeah. Wrap it up.
Now,
and then
it's
when he doesn't wrap it up, because now it's a deliberate slap in her face.
Yeah. Yeah. So you had to give him the mom voice.
Yeah, because he was like, she can't talk to us like that.
Yeah, oh yeah. And so they're all,
they all know better.
Yeah.
But they all are like,
okay. But they start leaving.
What a good idea.
But man, I thought he was going to get his lights knocked out. As soon as they're leaving, though, he's like, see you guys yelling. They're honking. Again, this is still 2 a.m.
Yeah.
They're honking deliberately, slap in the face. And, you know, and he's like, you can see Jupiter.
He was being kind of douchey.
He was being a total douchey.
Well, you know, and what's interesting about this is that we are, this flashback unfolds as he is finding out that, you know, he's at the, you know, at the lawyers, and they're going through the will.
Yeah.
Right.
So he's finding out that his brother has set this up to
basically
give him custody.
He's left him in charge of his only son.
And he's the, you know, he has to, you know, maintain the estate until he's 21.
Yeah. And he's supposed to be a backup, he keeps saying, because he's like, I'm the guy that if the other guy can't do it, I'm supposed to be the backup. But the lawyer's dumbfounded. He literally says, I'm taken aback. He didn't talk to you about this. I'm surprised that he never told you about this.
And it's like, we know that, like, there was a dad, but the dad's too old to you know, do it.
I think the dad's passed away now.
The dad's passed away.
Yeah, yeah.
The wife who has, you know, she's not, obviously, that's not even a factor to consider.
She doesn't even communicate with them.
Yeah, they don't even know where she is.
But he, and he has some, there's some, his aunt and uncle, I guess the dad's brother or something, they had moved to Minnesota.
Right.
So they're not
Minnetonka.
Yeah.
But they keep saying it wrong.
There's
Wonkatonka or Wisconsin. Yeah. I don't know.
So he's basically like, there's no one else, you know? And then I think the lawyer even says, like, well, is the mom, like, can we get a hold of the mom? And instantly he shuts that down, you know?
No.
He's just like, well, that's not, even if they did know, like, he's like, that will not happen.
But it's so funny, or it's not funny, but it's so interesting because, like, what they have set up and what the dad's expectations were in this were pretty, you know, like, they were assumptive, because it was like
pretty invasive to his life.
I was like, wow, these are like, this isn't just like, oh, if he could just do this. It's like, no, you're gonna have to be here. You're gonna have, you know, it was like,
he
it
gave
was
him
like
$5,000 moving expenses.
It's like, it's clearly like, a lot.
Yeah, the dad is asking a lot for him, and to assume that he'll move and take care of a kid and a house and leave. Not that the job, as the kid says, is much to do, but he still has to leave his job, leave his house.
He has to upend his life, and I think,
and he has to come back to this town.
Yeah,
which
he keeps looking out the window, like he just, like, he does it. This is all a shock, and he keeps looking out the window, and he keeps going back to that night.
Yeah, and so there's more to that night, we come to find out, and this is where the big reveal comes and is just truly heartbreaking. And I did not see coming. I thought in my mind, I don't know, you guys tell me what you thought. I thought that he was just an asshole. This scene shows that he's a man child. He's a, you know, being loud, not listening to the wife, and he has kids. And like, I thought the wife just left him because he was being a jerk. No. Come to find out that that night he, after everybody left, he went back to watch TV and found out he was out of beer. And it just, it flashes back and forth with the storytelling. Again, this is where you have to look really carefully, but you see he's wearing the same green sweater, mm-hmm. I think, so that's how you know it's that same night.
Yeah.
But they don't tell you. He just cuts back from another scene, and he's walking in the snow. You see him go into a mini mart buying beer, you know, and it's cool static shot, you know, they mm-hmm. stay outside the mini mart, I think, and he buys the beer and he goes back out. He's walking in the snow and he comes home to not much of a home. The entire thing is set ablaze.
I mean, in like, not like there's a fire in a room, like set that ablaze. Thing, it's like three alarm.
I kind of thought that's what was going to happen.
Did you?
I thought it was actually going to be carbon monoxide poisoning.
Yeah.
And that he was going to go in and find him not there.
Well, I thought at first when he was telling the story.
Movie, I knew, like, at this point, I was like, his family's gone.
Yeah.
They're gone. Yeah. Because obviously, the wife, he's living alone, and there's the wife, and I don't think she just, like, based on that, the way they played the characters, I was like, I don't think she just up and left with the children.
Well, except for the fact that he's getting into bar fights and thought maybe he's just has a criminal record.
But I also didn't feel like anybody took their emotion, or they didn't take things to the extreme version of anything in this movie at this point.
Because the thing is that, you know, we didn't address it, but there's an earlier flashback where she's sick with the kids and he's like helping out and picking up the baby,
and they have a very fond, you know, somewhat, you know, like they a familiar relationship. You know, like they've been, obviously they've been together for a while, but there's no ugliness,
like she's mad at him.
It's not like the other wife,
right? Like she's mad at him for being up late and being noisy, but she doesn't not love him. She just wants him to shut up.
This isn't like, yo, this is the last straw, and I'm gonna leave. And
yeah,
it was like, I was like, I knew they weren't gonna do that.
And in this earlier scene, you see that he's a good and caring father,
absolutely.
And he might not be the best father in the world, but
he's genuine,
right? And
that's what that scene was so important for to show, because we've only up until that point only saw him being this just like zombie at his job and starting bar fights, and we're like, this guy is just kind of a jerk, is what we think. And then you see that scene and how much fun he has with the kids, and he's picking them up, and how much love he has for the wife, and you're like,
which is why I was like, I expected the worst.
Because it's like, this guy was a different person.
Such a nice you know, moment of that family that I was like, this is the worst case scenario coming up.
And then how painful was it when, so you see that the house is ablaze, you don't see any of the kids anywhere, and then you see Michelle Williams on a stretcher with an oxygen mask on, and screaming. He's sitting there trying to comfort her, and she's just like pushing him away, and then it takes like, the feet keeps collapsing, so when they try to get her in the ambulance,
it's
just drawn out, and he's standing there, and she's like, get away from me, and how awkward is that?
They can't get the gurney, ambulance.
She's like, get away from me, and he just can't, he's there, and then he's sitting there watching the house, and you see the body bags that are like
the little tiny
full size. Full size, but the feet were folded over.
They're just tiny,
so there were just kids in there, and it's just like heartbreaking.
And he's you can see like his entire essence is just draining, away from him.
And this is where it goes silent.
He starts to grab the groceries that you know, like, because he doesn't know what else to do.
And this is a silent scene. So at this point, Kyle Chandler has pulled up to, you know, to come be with him. I think there is music in the background where there's no speech. They go to the music and silence, and he picks up the groceries and drops them, and then the two brothers comfort each other. I mean, it is a heartbreaking scene where his life is collapsed, and we understand why he's the way he is.
This is when I was like, I don't like this movie anymore.
Just awful. So obviously now then we're rewinding in our mind why he is zombified and going through life and starting fights, and like, this guy is just in a terrible place. And then we see him at the police station getting questioned. And the only thing I didn't like is I thought that the interrogation was a little too exposition-y. Like, we could infer what happened.
Right.
Like, I didn't really like that. I felt like they were explaining to the audience what happened instead of just letting us know that he...
I get what you're saying, and I didn't have that reaction. And I think the reason I didn't have that reaction is because it did tell us something important about that character,
which
is he didn't lie. He didn't make excuses.
No. He flat out said,
he expected
we're drunk. We did some
cocaine. Yeah.
And like nothing. It's all very like, he tells everything. And I also liked that the way the police reacted, they weren't like,
I don't know. We might have to bring you back. Well, like, you always like,
think, you okay. always, you always All right. assume the worst, and that exactly. No, I liked that scene being there. I just felt it went on a little long. Like, the fact that, I don't know, to me it was a little spoon-fed about the story. Like, I wish they would have tightened it up, because I do like
but
all that stuff.
But it's the thing
stuff.
That he does on the After, tail end of that I know, scene, right? that That's, they have to have that scene. Because even the cops are like, okay, well, yeah, I mean, unless something else, I don't think, I think we're done. Like, they just want him, just they, like, they know that this guy needs to go grieve.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they even say, like, there's no crime for screwing up. Like, that's, no. like, you, yeah. like, it's awful, but, like,
there,
he did.
Yeah, there's no crime for not putting the screen and, on and, the fireplace.
And also,
that's all, that, and that's what it was, is a log rolled out.
And yeah. the other thing you find out, too, is when he says, like, part of the reason he was gone so long is he wanted more beer. And he didn't want to drive.
He didn't want to drive.
And so he walked to the store. Yeah. So it was 40 minutes,
and he didn't want to run the heater because it dries out his wife's sinuses.
Oh, right. And that earlier scene where she has the cold, you see that they got the humidifier it's running. Like, well, like, it's
how, like, I mean, all how, of those pieces are in place. Yeah. And it's just,
but how terribly heartbreaking is that he didn't want to run the heater for his wife's sinuses?
Yeah.
And how guilty must she feel?
It's what would happen to somebody,
right?
Though.
Yeah,
I know. Exactly.
You don't think about
it's really, but yeah, because you don't presume the worst. You don't go, I'm not going to run the heater, and I might kill my whole family because of this log. Right. Like,
but there's no crime,
but, right?
For not putting the gate on the fireplace.
But you just have to think of the place that she was at, and later on we hear about all the ugly things she said. But how much guilt does she feel, thinking, well, they're dead because of my sinuses? Yeah. And you can just tell these two people are completely screwed up by this, as they should
and
be.
And he kind of, I mean, you could tell, like, he's kind of taken aback that the police are letting him go. Like, he thinks he should go to jail.
Because he wants to be punished.
Yeah.
Like, and that's, I mean, that's pretty common when somebody loses a child, especially when they feel responsible for it.
Yeah.
Like,
he says
he wants to be punished.
You're like, just gonna let me go?
Yeah. Like, I mean, he, and that's why as soon as he walks out of that room, and it's, he's like, okay, it's very calm and quiet. And as soon as he walks out of the room, he, like, pushes the cop and takes the gun and tries to shoot himself in the head around the spot.
He doesn't know how to take off the safety. And,
you have such a small window.
Sad. It's like, you can see, it's like, he's like, at this point, this guy is, he's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's gone, baby.
Have you noticed that in throughout the movie, in every single scene, and I think this had to have been conscious, he is the smallest character, and he's always hunched over, no matter where they're, like,
no, I didn't know. So.
Every single scene, he is so hunched
withdrawn
over and tiny.
Yeah.
Like, when he's eating with the one lady, or sitting with the one lady, or eating with the nephew. I was like, he's so, like, withdrawn and curled over and just like a husk.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to watch, like, because he's not a tiny guy.
Right.
And to have him, like, you know, every time they, in the movie, as I'm watching, is like, he's like smaller and smaller in the chair, to, like, he's just, he's not there anymore.
Right.
And, you know, he doesn't know what to do with his hands. Like, I thought that was always, like, he's always, like, kind of puts them in his pockets, or he just holds them, and he's just this, he's just,
Yeah, he was just, I mean, the way he played it, and that's why I think you got to give so many props, so much kudos to Casey Affleck. He was just a shell of a man in this, you know, and aside from the flashbacks that show you who he used to be, like, his portrayal of this guy just sleepwalking through life, kind of not really wanting to be there or existing anymore.
Yeah.
It's just, a brilliant performance.
And at that point, I mean, you're just like, okay.
Yeah. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so after that, it's him and the nephew trying to figure out how to resume life after the brother's death,
and he has no intention of staying there.
Yeah, no. That's the thing. He basically ends up saying that I'm gonna, you know, pick up and we're gonna go back to where I live, and you're gonna move, you're gonna leave school, and all this. And meanwhile, it's so. The points that the nephew, Patrick, make are so valid and so true, you know, because we see his life unfold. We see he's in a band.
He's in a band. He's in the hockey team.
He's got girlfriends.
Two girlfriends.
Yeah. And he's got a lot going on. And it's so true by the time he says this, because for the next, you know, half hour, we see his life and his relationships and everything that he has.
Right.
And also then you consider he's a 16-year-old kid. And, like, you know, that's
also
a very
kind
pivotal
of a selfish prick.
Yeah.
I mean, he is. Like, you know,
The nephew.
Like, yeah. You know, I mean, he can be.
He's a teenage boy.
Yeah, as someone who currently has a 16-year-old
boy
in the house. Like,
can say that.
Yeah, but
Crystal and I were both like, oh, so they're all like that.
Yeah. But his reasoning,
when he's,
he has honestly more valid reasons. Yeah, he does. To say,
no, that's why that line. I love watching those scenes because I think that just hammers home this line when he gives it. It's like we've seen his life and what he has.
Yeah, he's
and
got.
We've seen.
Yeah, like this kid's got a lot going on.
And we've seen Lee's life.
Yeah, and Lee has doesn't have.
And, but he says you could be a janitor anywhere.
Yeah. Right.
And he says that. So he goes through all the lines. I've got the school. I've got hockey. I've got the girlfriends. I've got all this here, and you've got being a janitor. And so that was such a powerful line. But Lee is just like, I don't want to talk about this. This is what he does. Right. Lee is very shut down, and you know, we understand why, but like that's his character. Yeah. He doesn't want to talk about it. If this is what he thinks, that's it. And he just ends the conversation.
There's eventually he does move out of the his one room.
Yeah.
You know, and he brings his stuff up.
For the summer.
And even that is just for the summer. And even that's just terrible. Because you know what he's doing. Like the only thing that seems to be of any value because like we have a flashback of like when he got the one room place in a basement and you know, Kyle Chandler, you know, again, the brothers have such a strong bond. He's like, we're going to buy you some furniture. He's like, I don't need furniture. Yeah. Like he, at this point, he's like, the brother is still trying to get him to maintain a life.
Yeah. He has a bed and a dresser and some pictures.
And he's like,
I think it goes back to, he doesn't feel like he deserves furniture.
Yeah. Right. Oh, absolutely. No, you can tell he has nothing left to live for in his mind and he just doesn't want it. He doesn't deserve it. You're right.
But he's got those three, you see those three framed
the
photos
pictures,
and they don't show them, which I like.
Yeah.
They don't show us because we know what they are.
We know.
And
yeah.
When he unpacks those photos, it's just like, it's just this and the street scene later are my two favorite. It's like, and this is such just a tiny moment of just like the delicacy with which he handles those photos. Yeah. Like they're the most important thing. Yeah. You don't see them and you don't need to.
Yeah.
And, but it's just gut wrenching the way he just has to coddle these pictures.
That's all he's got.
It's all he's got.
Yeah.
And I like when they show the nephew later sees the photos
and it stops him dead in his tracks.
Stops him.
Like it's just
and
like,
then he's like, can I get you anything else?
Yeah. Like hopefully. He's kind of like frustrated with him.
Yeah.
And he walks into his bedroom at the new house.
And he has a little reminder.
And he sees those and he just like to a screeching halt and it's like you know, and it is one of those moments of,
and this because this kid is good too
absolutely.
This is his first movie.
I don't know, man.
Yeah,
this is like, this kid's first movie,
but it's one of those things where and it's also such a great thing because you know, I'm joking about, oh, teenage 16 year olds are pricks, and it's like, well, they're pricks because like, you know, they think it's all about them,
right?
And part of growing up is realizing that it's not and that was a moment where he realized
it's not.
I think that scene is quick and short and seemingly inconsequential. I think it's the turning point of the film.
Oh, absolutely.
Because that's the moment when that kid realizes, I can't ask this guy to come back to this town.
Right.
I got to let him go.
Yeah.
As much as I want a dad and I want a connection to my dad, I got to let this guy go.
Yeah.
Like this town's no good for him. And there's a scene where, you know, he's asking for work at one of the docks where they're talking about the boat. And as soon as he leaves, the lady that works the desk, who I'm assuming is the guy's wife who runs the place, is just like, you will not hire that guy.
I don't ever want to see him here again.
Yeah. I felt like that scene struck me as a little like, I think there was probably more.
Yeah.
Because it was just so, like, I get, you know, they're talking about, like, the history.
Yeah, they kept showing the woman.
Like,
and they felt like there had to be more of a connection there.
More than
I know
just that,
me, too.
But,
I was
but she
looking
came out.
For-
Because we hadn't really, you know.
I just took it as like the town blames him.
Yes.
Like, oh, for sure.
You know, and that, so she just, and that she's just like, you're not hiring this
guy. I get what Dan means, though, because they kept flashing.
I would never
back.
Want to see him in here again.
Like, he killed his kids. Yes. You don't hire him.
So, you're right. I mean, I get it's the thing is, since they don't really, they just touch on it in bits and pieces.
Yeah.
You never really.
Right.
You know, but I think that's
what I like about
it, too. What works about it.
Is because it's left to you to connect the dots. Yeah. And I really would like to watch
the
movie again.
Never dip this into melodrama.
Yeah. And because I think if you watch it again, my guess is, I bet you the answers are there.
You're right.
I bet there's things going on in the periphery that if you can watch it already knowing the story before, you had to focus on the center. And now you can focus.
Yeah,
because
I was like, who's that lady? One other scene that, or one other thing that we should mention is that because it's so cold up there, they can't bury Kyle Chandler right away.
Right.
So
oh, man.
They have to keep him, you know, basically, you know, in a cooler.
Yeah.
And this freaks out the son quite a bit. And there's a moment where the son's like, at first I was like, oh no, God, the son's got the congenital.
I thought he had the heart thing too.
Yeah. Because he's like reaching in the freezer and all the crap's falling out. And you know, he's trying to put stuff back in. And he starts to freak out and he has like an attack.
Right.
And the kid at that point, all of a sudden, because this kid is so good that like all of a sudden you realize, wow, he is a kid.
Yeah.
And he sounds so young at that point.
Right.
The way, Casey Affleck is like, look, if you're going to freak out every time you see, you know, frozen chicken, you know,
I need to take you to the hospital because there's something not right. Yeah.
It was good. We got to do something.
And, but it also shows, again, and this is where harkens back to what we said earlier about how much family and love there is in this. He really cares about this kid. And as hard as he is and as I don't want to say as distant as he may seem because of his own problems he's dealing with, he never stops caring about this kid.
No.
The kid has his door locked and he says, you're freaking out. I need to have your door open. And he won't open it. So he kicks it in and he says, as long as you're freaking out, your door can't be closed. And he goes, I'm just going to sit here. You don't have to talk to me.
Right.
But man, you just never for a second doubt the love there between those two. And again, Affleck does such a great job portraying that.
And I don't think that there's a wasted scene or moment in this film.
No.
Everything feeds and builds or explains or makes it richer. It's just
it's an over 2 hour movie.
Yeah,
it's like 2 hours and 15, 2 hour and 10
minutes.
Yeah,
it's like 2:17.
So I mean,
it's a hard. Yeah, I mean it. Man, it's hard.
Yeah.
But you never like want to look away. But at the same time, it hurts.
It
to
is.
Look.
It's tough at times. And
it's nice that it does give you those moments of humor to kind of alleviate that.
Yeah.
But I think there's probably two more scenes that we should probably address.
Yeah. The mom.
So,
the
first
let's tackle with the mom.
Yeah.
I think it probably makes more sense first.
Yeah.
Which mom? The kid's mom?
The kid's mom. Okay. Patrick's mom. And so he decides to, the mom's been, they don't know where the mom is, but Patrick does. She emails him. And so he goes to visit her and, because he's like, well, I can go live with her.
Yeah.
And so, you see her new life and she's in a nice little middle class house and
she is very proper.
What a surprise about her husband.
Yeah.
I have not seen him.
That took me a little bit away from the movie.
Yeah. I was like,
Matthew Broderick.
What a weird role. Like, I mean, he's a big enough name. And again, I haven't seen him in a while, but like, it was just weird.
I get
that
what they were doing. I mean, it was kind of like, you know, like Juno casting, you know, where they like have a smaller person or a bigger
small
person
role.
In a small role.
Yeah. It was just very
was
surprising
off,
because I'm like, when he answered the door and this is again, a very small part, you see him in for 5 minutes of this over 2 hour movie and it's like, oh, the husband's Matthew Broderick. And then I started thinking, I'm like, when's the last time I saw Matthew Broderick? Like, did he stop acting for a while?
I think there's a lot of Broadway stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, what movie was he in last? I can't think of a Matthew Broderick role.
I mean, there was The Producers.
Yeah.
Well, I know. Yeah, but I mean, like, recently.
Yeah. I don't know.
I wonder, because this is the first time I've seen him in a movie, at least, that I can remember in a long time.
Yeah. But the mom is very, like, she's very, like, before she was very, like, New England white trash.
Yeah, she was very
trashy.
And
now she's...
she's born again now.
Yeah,
that's
now,
the thing.
Apparently, the Matthew Broderick's character is very religious, and
she's completely transformed into now like a Bible thumping,
right?
You know,
right?
And like they have to pray before they eat, and
what an awkward situation. And I get for both characters. I mean, I think Patrick was totally in the right. He was the least awkward of all of them.
He's just, you know, he's not a smartass.
No. I thought he was
being
kind
of funny. He does have a sort of like an elevated dry sense of humor, which I really liked.
Yeah.
You know, and he actually reminded me a lot of my nephew, which, you know, I think throws people off now because it's like, well, they think of him as just being a 16-year-old. It's like, but he's a smart 16-year-old.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Yeah, but he's not a smart ass.
Yeah.
And
but he was handling the situation for him seeing his mom for the first time forever very well. But the mom was just freaking out, which I think which I think leads us to the next scene in the email. But like,
well, she's probably still has her own guilt.
Oh, for sure.
Well,
but she.
My interpretation of the scene is that she that life is built on a lie. Like,
yeah,
she has presented herself to this guy as something that she's not.
And, yeah.
And
as soon as there's a, you know, a glimpse of her previous life, she cannot handle it.
Right. Yeah.
You hear her.
Right.
And you hear glasses and bottles jingling in the next room.
Yeah.
You know?
And she, but yeah, I mean, she, like, this guy believes her as somebody who has, I interpret it as she's someone who has a past and has made mistakes, but she has the Lord now and forgiveness and all that. And this guy's buying into that.
Yeah.
And seeing this kid is proof of, you know, it's not just a bad decision. She left her kids.
Yeah.
And that's a shitty thing to do.
Yeah.
And then she disappears in the kitchen and he's like, oh, I'm going to go check on her. And yeah, she's clearly gone in there to drink.
Yeah.
And you know,
she's had about 2 minutes of meeting and dinner.
Yeah. She is, she's an addict, but she is what Dr. Phil would call, white knuckling her way through addiction.
Like, yes.
She's not drinking, but she's, you know, they also refer to it as dry
drunk. They call it dry drunk.
Yeah. It's like she's not drinking, but she's not better.
Right.
And the wheels come off rapidly. And this kid kind of, through no fault of his own, exposes the lie of the new life that she's constructed.
Yeah.
And the only way this life will work is if he's not in it.
And he gets uninvited.
And he gets uninvited.
By Matthew Broderick.
Yeah.
Which I like when they're doing, like, they show it on the screen, and I was reading the email from Matthew Broderick, and then they have the voiceover, and then I like that the kid just closes his
computer in the middle of it.
Cuts off his voiceover.
Good,
He's like, good, shut up.
He's like, no need for that.
He's done.
Yeah.
So then the next scene is the big one we've been talking about.
Yeah, kind of the money shot of the film, which is
Like Clam Chowder.
Yeah, Like Clam Chowder.
It's a callback. Give a pass on this one.
It's a callback.
It's a pass.
Lee runs into his ex-wife.
Well, she calls first of all. We haven't heard from her half the movie.
She called.
Well, until the phone call, because you're
find out she's because she wants to come.
Yeah.
To the
funeral.
Oh, that's right.
We find out, you know, she's also pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
That funeral scene is hard to watch because I've been in circumstances where you've got somebody you are no longer associating with, and it's just everything else is happening, and it's usually, you know, but then there's that just. You can tell, like, for these two people, it's the most dreaded moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, and some people are aware of it and some people aren't.
Yeah.
And you can even sense that in the scene. And it's while this funeral is going on, this is, like, obviously something very deep. So when they do meet up later.
Yeah. And she's
running into each other.
She's very pregnant.
She's very pregnant at that moment.
You know, basically a very visual reminder of her life has moved on.
I mean,
the life
so,
that they could have had.
It was so tough. I mean, just starting off with that phone call, and again, the way that Casey Affleck plays it, like, I mean, she's like, and, you know, I didn't know whether or not to tell you, but I'm pregnant, and obviously those two lost their kids together, and how much that must hurt him, and it shows, and it just, it's very understated, like, he's very quiet, but the facial expressions show it.
I guess around then when he busts his hand through the window, too, after that phone call.
And then they meet up.
But when they meet up, and then obviously it's after the baby's been born,
mm-hmm.
you know, because she's pushing the stroller.
And they just have, it starts off as a very normal conversation of just like, hey, nice to meet you, good to see you, you know, how long are you in town for, that kind of stuff. And then she asks him if they can go to lunch.
Yeah.
And then she just has a meltdown of epic proportions.
Yeah.
Of just guilt and remorse. And it was very moving. I mean, very. Yeah. I'm like, I'm getting choked up now just thinking about it. It was.
Yeah. But, this is obviously in the scene that they never had this conversation.
Yeah.
And they've never dealt with this. And this is the moment where she just. And
she's apologizing.
And I like that she's not blaming him.
Right. Yeah. Anymore. But you can tell that there was a time when
she
apologizes for all the terrible things she said.
Right. She knows it.
Yeah.
And she's basically processed her way through to get to this point, and she has moved on. And she says, my heart is broken and it'll never get better.
Right.
but she basically judges like, I still love you.
Yes.
And it's just so hard to watch. But he's basically,
and he cannot,
in his
and
mind.
He, and he can't hear any,
he can't,
I mean,
hear any of
he's
this.
Just like,
the
whole time he's like, get me out of
here. Yeah, he's been so distraught and after the whole situation. Yeah. And then, you know, of course, all her actions. And now he's hearing this and it's like, that he doesn't need that, right? I mean,
no.
He's nowhere in the mental state to take that
and
kind
he,
of.
And, well, and that's what he tells her. He's like, there's nothing left.
Right. And it's just heartbreaking and you see her hurt and
he and this is and it is not just like there's nothing left, like it was stolen away from him. He is actively not going to have anything left.
Yeah.
You know, that's why he's actively aloof to people. That's why he's carrying this.
Yeah.
You know, this is his cross that he will continue to carry. Mm. And even though they have this conversation and she's trying to like, you know, like, so basically everybody has been trying to like, you know, like his brother, the whole point, his brother's, you know, the long con that of his brother was, this is the thing that will kind of make him come out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, he structured this as a way to hopefully.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and also I do like just the callback to, I didn't mention it. We were talking about the lawyer scene and reading the will. Dan, you mentioned they flash back to what happened during that scene, but it also comes right after he's basically saying, you're in charge of this other human being.
Yeah.
You're in charge. The brother wants you to be in charge of my child. And then it shows what happened when he was in charge of his children and just makes it even more heartbreaking. I like the association with how they showed the clips there.
I know.
And the scene on the street, there's a moment that was like just a gut punch, and I don't know why, but like when she calls him honey, like there's just a tone in her voice of like she's still married to him.
You
know what I mean? In her head, she's remarried and she's having a family, but she still feels him as her husband. She says honey with a sense of familiarity that only a spouse has. It wasn't a waitress saying, can I bring you more pie, honey?
It was a wife
saying honey.
No,
what can I do to help
him.
You? Yeah, it was awful.
And another testament to the filmmaking here and the director, during the funeral, whenever he is being reintroduced to the ex-wife and her new husband, they don't have any words. They again go silent with, I think, maybe some music in the background. But,
looking away.
Yeah.
Like but it's really not trying to have eye contact or direct eye contact.
Yeah, but it's
like
the actions.
She looks at him when she knows he's not looking.
Yeah.
He looks at her when he knows she's not looking.
Right.
But when they're face to face, it's just like, oh, God.
But you never get you never get lines between him and the new husband of like, oh, hey, how's it going? It's all just, it's just pictures.
No.
You know,
it's and it's also nice because everybody's very aware and respectful of the situation.
Yeah.
Like, nobody is looking to cause more damage, and everybody gets, even if it's not the life they wanted, that it's like,
but it is the people, and it is the people in the periphery who are talking about it, like the lady at the office, or like the kids on the hockey team, or the coach. It's like all think they know,
right?
And they don't know,
no,
but they all think they know.
Yeah, and then as the movie ends, it's really like there really isn't a hard and fast ending. I mean, there's no real great resolution.
You know, what's interesting is that the veneer's cracked.
Right.
And that's as much as they're going to get.
Right. It's like the very first, very tiny baby step towards healing maybe has occurred. And that's how they leave you.
But it's great that Lee has stopped just thinking of himself and that he's right for a second. And I'm not saying he's just some kind of jerk. We know why he's the way he is. Yeah. But remember, the kid says, you're uprooting me and doing all this stuff and you're a janitor. And this is the first time where he's grown enough to realize that he and moving this kid away from his life is not what's best for him.
But at the same time, he finds a solution that doesn't involve him. He still stays where he's, you know, like,
well,
he's
moving.
He's not moving to Manchester.
No. He's moving closer.
Yeah, he moves closer. He finds a family friend who's been in the periphery of the film that decides that they'll go ahead and take care of him for a year, and he's going to he'll help out financially.
And it's interesting because the way they play and I love that couple, too.
Yeah.
They have a very small part. It is at the funeral, and it's hilarious because it's the kind of crap that happens at a funeral.
Yeah.
You know, where couples are trying to, like, did he eat?
Right.
Yeah. You know, that's all they're trying to figure out is he's got to eat.
Yeah.
Because that'll fix it. And, you know, they do this in such a way that, like, they're going to adopt him, even though the guy said, I'm trying to get rid of kids, but, you know.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
But it never feels like he's exploiting, and it doesn't feel like they're, like, extending their reach, you know.
Right.
It's like, you get why this is happening.
They're doing what's best for the kid, though. Because
it's for the kid.
And they know it's, and they also know that it's short term.
Yes. At least, know, at least not taking advantage of it. Like, at no point is it like, he's not a deadbeat, you know,
right,
uncle.
He's going to make sure that, because the kid's been left money, so he's going to make sure that they're helped out with whatever bills this kid's going to cause. And he's moving closer, but not to Manchester, because he can't come back to that town.
No.
He can't see his ex-wife. He can't deal with the stares of the former friends.
And you don't fault him.
No, you don't. But he moves close enough to where you know that he's going to stay in this kid's life. That's not just lip service.
They're going
to
fix the boat.
Yeah,
which is kind of a symbol of his father.
Yeah.
And
he found a way to compromise because the kid wants to fix the boat the whole time.
Oh, yeah,
Lee knows they don't have the money.
Yeah, but they show this scene with all of a sudden you see these rifles.
And another funny part, he goes, are you going to...
And they're looking at it and you're like... Yeah, in a lesser movie, this would have gone in some weird, dark, or depressing way.
Then the kid says something like, are you going to shoot me or yourself or something? Right. Like, he's like, who are we going to shoot?
Who's going to shoot who?
Yeah, like, he just said, I'm one of those dry humor type lines.
And
but he's like, you know how much these are worth?
Yeah, like, we could sell these.
Let's fix the boat.
And fix the boat that you want to fix.
Boat. So he fixes the boat, finds a way to keep it. He finds a way for it to pay for itself. And then when he gets old enough for the kid to have the boat and continue his father's legacy. So, like, Lee really has... opened up a lot, even though he still has issues and everything, but like all that, I think
he
shows.
Still has a small apartment, but he's got a slightly bigger apartment that has enough room for the nephew, if the nephew,
right? Because he says he wanted one with an extra room so his nephew could come stay.
Yeah,
so it's there are signs of hope there, and that's why when you know the other reviewer said he thought it was a bleak film, and I'm like, there is certainly bleakness in the film. But that is for sure. But it's not just a bleak film.
No,
It's like if you see that, then you know if you only see it being bleak, then that's
like a Rorschach test. Yeah.
But if you see that, like there's the opportunity,
right?
And that's
and he's
about
starting
as
to
much
take
as
it.
This, you know, as you could expect, and as much as this movie should offer,
I mean, right? But it's just
in a lesser movie, they would have put on some pap ending of like.
I was
going to
say you would get that. You know, they would start playing Salisbury Hill and the ending credits, and
they'd be tooling away on the boat with you know, starting a fishing business.
Yeah, they'd have a new. Yeah, they'd have a new logo. And,
that would be the. Yeah, that would be a lesser film.
That would be the Nicholas Sparks version of this movie,
and they don't.
No, they don't.
It is funny because you know when this movie ended. You know, it was at Frontenac, so they don't move quickly anyway. But when it ended, like nobody really got up because they're like, it goes to black before credits roll.
Yeah,
and people just kind of sat there like, is there?
Did you check for pulses?
Is there? You know, is there anything else? No, nope.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it.
Oh, you didn't see when Nick Fury showed up at the after credits?
Find Thor's hammer.
That starts the whole thing, and then
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like there was even that anticipation of like, maybe? No.
But it's such a good movie. Such a good movie. And I know it's a little different from what we normally talk about, but it's nice to mix it up every once in a while.
I'm just happy for a good movie.
But it's just a tremendous film.
Yeah, even, and well, more Tom and I have, and our cold dead hearts have the occasional...
Every once in a while, but don't let people know.
That's it.
That's all you get. We're
so
200.
You. Happy
we're 238 episodes in. And I finally had a moment.
Yeah,
so
I got a little sniffle.
Yeah.
So the end.
He's
still making us work on Christmas Eve, and we cannot have another log for the fire.
Yeah, he's a sizey wig.
Yeah.
So, I guess that's it for this episode. Let's go around the table, and everybody can say where to find themselves.
This is Dan. You can find me on Twitter at DanGraney67, GRANEY.
This is Kevin. I'm on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. I'm on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. If you want to continue the conversation online, you can find us on Twitter at Real Spoilers or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. Go there. Share the show with your friends. Join the League of Show Sharers. It helps us tremendously. You can also find us on iTunes, where you can rate, review, subscribe. Again, we say it every week because it helps us a bunch and it makes us feel better about ourselves as people. So there. Hmm. At least it does for me.
I don't care.
But
I mean...
Yeah,
I care about the reviews, so thank you for that.
But. Yeah, but it makes us feel like we're not just sitting in our basement talking to ourselves,
right?
Which is kind of what we're doing. So thank you when you do that. It does make a difference.
Oh, I mean, the webcam should be clear indication that we're not just talking to ourselves.
Would the webcam help with the spooge jokes?
No,
damn it.
No, I could just make them visual. So
Tom is interpretive dancing.
No,
yes.
No.
So anyway, that's it for this episode. I don't know what the movie is next week, and I'm too lazy to look it up. But
you know
we'll
what? You know what comes out next week is Tom Ford's second film, his follow up to A Single Man.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I thought that was one of the best movies of the year.
I thought it was a little too.
I love that movie, it's
a little too self aware.
Really?
Of its importance
I mean, I thought for a fashion designer's film.
No, I mean, I didn't think it was bad, but I couldn't. It didn't hit me on a gut level.
Really?
When does Jackie come out?
Locally, December 21st, I think. Oh. So,
Natalie Portman looks just like her.
She does look. Yeah.
No, have you seen it yet?
I have not.
Okay. I mean, I have to say, it's like. That I mean, just that trailer is really.
Yeah,
I think just the fact that they're using Camelot, you know, and Richard Harris. But I was just like, wow, this looks like this might be really good.
Yeah it's getting decent reviews from what I understand.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, so that's it for this week. And until next time, Amanda's doll is named Annabelle.
Complication. Complication.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Complicated, it's so complicated that my mind can't even say it. Check it. If everything was just a motherfucker, complicated. When Leo took the globe and played.